Hey there, it's Jarrett, and I've got two pieces of information for you. Number one, we're actually taking a week off this week. We don't normally take much time off over the course of the year, but we wanted to take a little bit of time for ourselves. But we still wanted to make sure you had an episode. So we pulled one of our classic episodes with one of our very favorite guests, and we hope that you enjoy it. We know y'all love Char just as much as we do, so we're not too concerned about that. Second piece of news is we're looking for a little bit of help at Fanti. We're looking for a new producer. If you're interested in being a part of the Fanti fam in a very, very close way, go to MaximumFun.org/jobs for more information on our new producer position that just opened up. Again, that's MaximumFun.org/jobs. We're really excited to look for this new person. Go to MaximumFun.org/jobs for more information on what that position entails. And maybe we'll see you here at Fanti. With that, I encourage you to enjoy the episode and then go have a great week. Make sure to share the show with a friend. You can hit us up on social media at Fanti Podcast, or you can make sure to use the hashtag Fanti Fam. I think that's all my lawyers wanted me to say. Enjoy the conversation. We'll see you here with a brand new episode next week.
We're going to discuss this new mantra that seems to be spreading like wildfire of all Black lives matter. Now, before I introduce our guest, I want to give a little context to this conversation. So here in Los Angeles, there was a protest, an organization. There was a demonstration. There we go.
All right, synonym.
There was a demonstration called the All Black Lives Matter March that happened, and it was organized by a group called Black, BLAC. The Black LGBTQ Activists for Change, under the guise of centering Black LGBTQ people specifically in this conversation about Black Lives Mattering and making sure that, you know, we include in particular the names of Black trans people as we are organizing. There's a lot of drama behind the scenes of how the All Black Lives Matter March came to be, but now All Black Lives Matter seems to be a statement that a lot of people are mentioning. And so I want to bring in our guest. She is our first return guest to the podcast. Welcome, host, journalist, all of the things, Char Jocelle.
Thank you all for having me. Yes, I'm so excited. I'm so excited to be back, and I'm so excited to talk about this.
I have to tell you, I know one specific listener who is like such a big fan of yours. It's like, I could just listen to Char talk all day. I just love her. I'm such a fan. So like, I know that there are people that are very happy that you're on the show this week. So thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay. So as I said, I feel like, you know, this whole All Black Lives Matter, it's a complex thing for a number of reasons. We're going to get into all of that. But first, I want to know, we're all based here in LA. Did either of you go to the All Black Lives Matter demonstration last week, Char?
No, I did not. And I did not. It's funny that we're having this discussion because I went on, I did an Instagram live with my former podcast co-host, Jace. And I was talking about this, and he was the one who actually corrected me and updated me as to the personnel changes at the helms of this march. But I didn't go because I had to work. Like, I'm a freelancer. Y'all know how it goes. I had to work. And
amen.
And I
listen,
still, you know, it's still the coronavirus hasn't gone anywhere, guys. So it was. And then also, if I'm being totally transparent on your show, I sometimes have a debilitating fear when it comes to protests. And I felt like this specific one was could have possibly been a target for nonsense, if you know what I mean. And so, it was a lot that went through my mind with this. But I had so many friends and associates that participated, and I was there with them in spirit. And of course, I'll use my platform continuously to keep amplifying the voices of what society may deem the unheard.
Jared, did you attend?
I did not attend the protest either. I already have a compromised immune system, and adding the level of funky COVIDina, like, I'm just not that inclined for protests. And I will say, like, I'm also a bit concerned. One, I am fully behind the protests, and I believe that they're really important, and I hope that they continue, to be quite honest. But I also have a growing concern about the ways that the president continues to stoke these frustrations with these crowds, because I feel like At the risk of sounding like some kind of a conspiracy theorist, the president is very aware that the people who are out in the streets right now are not voting for him. And I start to get the feeling that he continues to piss these people off, say all kinds of things, because he knows that COVID is out there and knows that, you know, that he won this election, air quotes, by 77,000 votes. And it just, it concerns me that, like, the more that we're out there, the more it concerns me about our lives when we consider the fact that we have to get all the way to November to vote. So it's a concern to me. But I've not gone to the protest. But I, as Char was saying, like, I've been, you know, on, you know, a bunch of shows and doing a lot of different content to really try and amplify those voices and make sure that we're, that I'm a part of it. So how have you engaged protests, Trevor?
I did not go because Miss Rona, as you all have mentioned, is doing what she does. And additionally, I mean, as a gender nonconforming person, like, just being out in public spaces a lot isn't always the best. And I've, you know, attended and covered protests as a journalist and had, you know, my body gawked at and, you know, been singled out and just trying to do my job. And so being out on the streets doing the protests, that it just ain't my thing, you know? Right. But shout out to the girls who are out there because somebody got to do it. But I mean, I think that. I should also say the ways in which this particular protest was, like, put together and a lot of the politics and the posturing behind it, I just couldn't go, I think, in good faith knowing how it all kind of came together, despite perhaps supporting kind right. of the overall message and the overall idea. But are either you two, like, prior to this moment, are you protest folks? Are you get out in the street type of folks? Or do you, like, activate? Do your activism?
Wow.
in other ways?
For myself, I did hit the streets with the murder of Trayvon Martin back about a decade ago. Wasn't that almost a decade ago that happened? And so, yeah, I think it was 2012, if I'm not mistaken. Right. You know, there's been so many headlines. It's really hard to keep track. But other than that, no. And I think that it's important for people to kind of find their lane in all of this. Not all of us are equipped and designed to be front lines of protest type girls, but there are a myriad of different ways that you can show up and use your voices in ways that maybe the protest folk mm-hmm. can't, because no one can do it all. And there's a million and one different lanes to be covered out here as it pertains to amplifying certain causes. And so ultimately, to answer your question, no, I'm not necessarily a protest person.
Jared?
I have been a protest person. I've been to multiple protests, and I see the value in the solidarity and the being together in those kinds of moments to be able to say, like, you know, this is not okay, or pushing back, or quite frankly being disruptive. I have been a protest person. I have not gone to, like, a million protests, but I've been to my fair share for sure. And similarly to what Char was saying, I think everyone has to figure out what their role is in the movement, right? Everyone is not going to be out there with the sign and, you know, face to face with the police. And I think that when you can figure out, like, what is the way that you can participate, either you can be out there for protest, you can be using, you know, a microphone in your platform, as we have talked about here, you can be a part of aiding the people who are out there, you know, getting food or getting message or doing graphics or whatever it is. But you can also be working on policy. You can be working on, you know, developing what we are asking for and mm-hmm. and working with, you know, elected officials and things like that. So there are multiple different roles, even more than those, that people can play to participate. And I think that I also know that there are some people that I've talked to who haven't been able to go or didn't go for whatever reasons, that felt a guilt about not going. And I would say that I push back on that and say, like, I recognize that you want to participate, but, like, if you can't do that, what can you do? And I think that's what's probably most important for me.
I feel like I felt a little guilty about not going, mainly because I live a couple blocks away from Hollywood Boulevard where it started. And I was like, sis, it's right down the street. What you doing? But, you know, I got over that very quickly. So don't worry about that. But I wanted to know.
We were really concerned about you. We were really concerned about that weight on you.
But I wanted to know, as we get into like the fan part of this conversation, particularly when it comes to this mantra, all Black Lives Matter. I mean, I think on its face, like I would assume we all agree with it, right? All Black Lives Matter is supposed to be this recognition, I feel like, in particular, about like the ways in which Black trans folks, Black gender expansive folks also are victims of not only state-sanctioned violence from police, but also violence within and external to the Black community. And so I hear all Black Lives Matter, and I'm like, okay. But I'm wondering, Char, did you have that same connection to the statement when you first heard it?
I did. And I did. I felt this way because, and I've been having so many conversations about this. I went live on Instagram. I want to say it was June 4th. It was the day after or the day around that we saw Ayanna Dior in Minneapolis getting mugged mm-hmm. in the at the gas station or whatever. And so it just made me upset because it feels like despite Black Lives Matter being founded by three women, it feels like the Black Lives Matter movement, not the sentiment, but the movement is rooted in centering cisgender heterosexual Black men. And so even within the All Black Lives Matter statement, you know, we could include cis Black women in that as well, because, I mean, we're fighting to keep Breonna Taylor's hashtag alive right now. Mm-hmm. So I certainly felt that way just as a Black trans woman and dealing with, you know, interlocking systems of oppression and being at these intersections. It sometimes is like, why does my voice even matter? You know what I'm saying? Why would I be on the front line? Should something happen to me, you know, no one's going to care. No one's going to say anything. It can sometimes feel that way. And so I was feeling very depleted, very low, and very, like you mentioned earlier about the guilt. It did feel a little guilty, like, Char, you could be doing more. But if I'm being honest, it almost felt like, well, what's the point? Because mm-hmm. should something happen to me with intimate partner or state-sanctioned police, is anyone
or at the protest
or at the protest, you know, justice for Toyin, you know, what is anyone going to care? Because mm-hmm. if they're not caring about Black cis women, if we're fighting to keep Black cis women and their hashtags and their causes alive, who am I as a Black trans woman to pipe up about anything? That's how it can sometimes feel.
I get that. I know for myself, when I saw the event coming and, you know, getting text messages and all that kind of stuff and seeing the posts, I appreciated the sentiment that seemed like it was about inclusion, about, you know, bringing everyone's voices to the table. But I appreciated the way that seemed to say, like, that there are people who are not being included in this conversation and that we need to be more inclusive of that. I didn't feel like that was expressed for cis women in the way that you're talking about, Char. I felt like, you know, it was a very LGBTQIA kind of thing, but like cis women are definitely a part of that group that is excluded for sure. And I mean, and I want to say it was Kimberly Crenshaw who did a TED talk that, you know, she named all of these different Black men. She asked everyone to stand up and said, if you've heard of these names, have a seat. And if you haven't, you know, if you haven't heard this name, you know, remain standing. And then she went through all of these Black women and like no one had heard any of their names. Right. And it's because we do seem to focus on the murders of these Black men, primarily cis Black men who are dying, but we don't have these Black men who are dying, but not the women. So I'm 100% there with you. Travelle, how did you feel when you heard this initially?
Yeah, I think I would echo what both of you have said. The sentiment seemed great. And it seemed necessary for it to be said, but I think the manifestations of how it's shown up have like drawn concern by a lot of people, because the folks who I feel like initially were saying all Black Lives Matter, they were doing it to be inclusive. They were doing it to draw attention to Tony McDade, who was killed by police 3 days after George Floyd, right, in Tallahassee, mm-hmm. Florida. They were saying it to bring attention to Layleen Cubileto-Polanco's story, who died in police custody on Rikers Island during this month, in June last year, right? They were doing it to bring attention to all of these folks, Nina Pop and the two Black trans women whose bodies were just found.
Rhea Milton and Dominique Fells, I believe, yes. were their names.
They were doing it to bring attention to these entities. But then as we pivot into the anti of this All Black Lives Matter, I think even the Jerry, you mentioned a thing about like just like the language of it all, and how yeah. All Black Lives Matter is it's very All Lives Matter-esque.
So like for me, when we were producing this, I was writing down my anti feelings, and like I as you know, Travelle, I wrote down hate the language, right? So like I feel like we've spent, you know, 7 years trying to say to people like, All Lives Matter is a different thing. All Lives Matter is, you know, countering this. All Lives Matter is, you know, inherently kind of problematic if you're really understanding what Black Lives Matter is about. And so then to take the word all and then put it in front of Black Lives Matter, I feel like it really confuses the message. And I really, really did not like that. Of all of the different ways that we could have messaged this,
yeah.
they could have messaged this, I felt like it was poorly.
And people, and you know what, you're not the only one to say that, because I feel like just that messaging, that's kind of like a dog whistle of sorts, because people automatically, from what I saw online, rejected it because it's like the word all is very polarizing in the larger mm-hmm. context of this conversation. And so I did see discussion around how people trying to derail what we, or why is there a need to put all when Black Lives Matter is indeed an inclusive statement, which I agree it is. But the direction, mm-hmm. what we cannot take away from is the direction that the movement seems to go into by the people itself is continuously centering Black men. That's yeah. what we can't take away from. Because the Black Lives Matter saying that is indeed inclusive statement as is.
And to a point you brought up earlier, Char, you know, the Black Lives Matter, like, entity, the folks who brought this to our consciousness collectively, if I'm not mistaken, two out of the three Black women who put this together are queer. They identify yes. as queer, and they're very clear, right, about from their vantage point that it means LGBTQ folks, it means trans women, it means cis women, it means, like, literally every type of Black person. But to your point, it seems like I don't know if it's the way we're talking about it, or the fact that we, you know, live in a patriarchal society, and so
the
manifestations of our anger only seem to bubble up when it is cishet Black men who, because we also didn't see, for example, right, this type of outrage to this extent when Jamel Moore was found dead in Ed Buck's apartment here in West Hollywood, yeah. right?
Yeah,
and
true.
So it is a very specific cishet Black man thing, but there is, you know, there's a, what do you call it? Appears to be, I guess, like a hierarchy in terms of all of this. And to your point earlier, Char, it means that, like, for Black trans and gender expansive people, like, what about us? And I hate that we have to say all Black Lives Matter and risk that conflation that you mentioned, Jared, in order to, you know, make people know that, like, we here too, and we facing the same violence, if not compounded as well.
Well, I think also to that point, when we first started seeing all the protests happening post George Floyd, I was saying a lot that I feel like people, more than they are angry, they are tired, and we're frustrated, and we are, you know, kind of exhausted by the onslaught of, like, always there being another story. But part of that feeling from the George Floyd story, I also have around all Black Lives Matter, because it's like, Char and I did Van Lathan's podcast mm-hmm. mid-year last year sometime.
Yeah, it was last April.
And we had
April.
This conversation. Was that okay? So it was more than a year ago now. And it was a great conversation with Van Lathan, formerly from TMZ. You guys probably would know him mostly from the Kanye video where Kanye was at TMZ showing his ass. And we had a really great conversation about, you know, the issues of the community. And part of what we talked about, and ended up becoming a clip on social media, was us talking about not feeling like we have the support of Black folks en masse. And he shared that video on Instagram, and Char and I talked on the phone like, oh, we know how this is about to
go. Yeah. Right?
Yeah. And like, and the comments in that section, in the comment section there, were egregious from a lot of people. And it required myself. Char, I don't know if you went and responded to it or not, but like,
no, you know me. I was Yvette Noel, sure. I was not responding to anything.
Well, like, I definitely, first of all, I love you for calling out Yvette. If you guys don't know who it is, if you know, you know.
If you know, you know.
But I went and did a post and kind of explained to Black folks, like, the Black folks that are in these comments saying to us, like, oh, you know, why do you have to bring that up and blah, blah, blah. You are the same as the white people who are telling us
Absolutely.
That racism isn't a thing. And so we dealt with this last April and have been talking about how long that had been going on. And here we are more than a year later still having this conversation. And I know for myself that I'm tired that this is even necessary in the first place.
I think what hurts for me, particularly as a Black woman in the space, is that it feels like I become so impassioned, so saddened, so filled with rage when these stories happen. I immediately want to take action. But when I zoom out and really look at how none of this energy is ever reciprocated, typically from what I've seen, when Black trans women are murdered, the only people talking about it are other Black trans women. Mm-hmm. Okay? And so to kind of swallow that hard pill of truth, it's like I said, like I mentioned at the top of this segment, it's enough to make me just want to slow all the way down, because it's all about self-preservation as well. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to overexert myself for a cause that I know, like I said, wouldn't be reciprocated to me. And at this point, no one can convince me of otherwise, because when I've seen these headlines about Dominique and Rhea, and even with Ayana Dior's public mobbing that happened in Minneapolis, I saw so many cis Black people either being complicit in affirming that or providing reasoning as to why it was okay, which was enough to just send me emotionally spiraling, because it's like, okay, Char, well, what are we doing? What's the point?
Hi, my name is Graham Clark, and I'm one half of the podcast Stop Podcasting Yourself, a show that we've recorded for many, many years. And at the moment, instead of being in person, we're recording remotely, and you wouldn't even notice. You don't even notice the lag.
That's right, Graham. And the great thing about this... Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Okay. And,
okay, go ahead.
And you can listen to us every week on MaximumFun.org.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Allie Gerst.
And I'm Julia Prescott.
And we're the hosts of Round Springfield.
Round Springfield is a Simpsons-adjacent podcast where we talk to Simpsons folks about non-Simpsons things.
That's right. So in the past, we've gotten to talk to legendary showrunners and writers like Al Jean, Bill Oakley, Josh Weinstein, Dana Gould, Mike Reese, and David X. Cohen.
Voice actors like Maurice LaMarche, Maggie Roswell, and Yardley Smith, the voice of Lisa Simpson herself.
Hell yeah. So we've been away securing guests for our final 5 episodes. We won't tell you everybody, but we'll let you know that the last episode is kind of a big deal. We got Matt Groening.
Homer's dad.
We got Homer's dad.
Check out new episodes of Round Springfield starting June 21st.
On Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts.
Smell you later.
I was heartened by I think they said estimated 15,000 people who showed up to the Brooklyn Liberation demonstration, which was, you know, which centered and was organized primarily and led by Black trans women and femmes. Shout out to this is actually a spoiler for one of my honorable mentions, but whatever, to Raquel Willis and the Okra Project and the Marsha P. Johnson Institute and all of the organizations there. But like that for me signaled, it gave me a little bit of hope when we start talking about this, because never have I seen, you know, people in such large numbers, like screaming Black trans lives matter, and screaming that, you know, Black trans power matters and all of this stuff.
How many of those people were Black? Do we have the numbers for how many of those protesters were Black?
We don't. However, just, you know, just looking at photos, I will say there was a lot of white folks there. I mean, there was a lot of colored folks.
That's why I asked, because I saw the photos as well. And I'm not diminishing it. I greatly appreciate it and have nothing but respect for my sister Raquel. Oh my gosh, love her. But I'm saying, as far as the turnout of the people, you get what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And at an all Black Lives Matter kind of an event, you would hope to see a lot more Black people at an event like that to be able to stand with you. And I think about, as you mentioned, Ayanna Dior, Char, I just watched, at the risk of spoiling one of my my dishonorable mentions, or one of my honorable mentions, I should say, in the Disclosure documentary on Netflix, I was really, I really had to sit for a moment and process where they were talking about the ways that trans people have been depicted in media for years, and how that informs parents about their children and what their children have to face going forward in the world. And when I look at that Ayanna Dior video and the fact that there was a swarm of people attacking her, right? And then to see people not coming to her defense in that conversation, I imagine like the parents of a trans child seeing that and thinking that that's what their child has to expect. And I think about, I mean, quite frankly, Char, I immediately think of you in those moments of like, you are like the person I interact with the most that is trans and like that I have the most perspective on and from. And so that really stuck with me, thinking like, what is it like to be the parent of a trans child and to see that image time and time again, and then to hear that your child is trans and to worry about that? And then what is it like to be a trans person and see that and know that like there is not someone coming, a cis Black person that is going to come speak up for you in the same way?
There will maybe be a woman. Floyd. There will maybe be a cis Black woman, typically what I've seen when these types of things happen. There will maybe be a cis Black woman or a group of cis Black women that come in, but it's towards the end, typically. Mm-hmm. But it's always cis Black women from what I've seen. Because I've seen, I think there's been two of these. Last year, there was a public mobbing of Malaysia Booker in the streets of Dallas. Mm-hmm. So seeing Ayanna Dior's was very reminiscent of that and brought up a lot of triggers. Because I covered Malaysia's story for Zora. I spoke to Malaysia's family members during that trial. It's enough. I'm struggling to find my words because it's gutting me even thinking about the pain that this woman's family and friends went through with the outcome of all of that, and even having to watch that video for research purposes. It's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah. Travelle, you have any final thoughts?
I mean, I guess I'm interested in where the movement goes from here, if the movement goes anywhere. And I think, you know, there are so many efforts being made, particularly by Black trans and gender expansive folks, to ensure that the broader Black Lives Matter movement is that we can participate in that as well. But I'm also so often reminded of, you know, the instances that Char has brought up with Malaysia Booker and Ayanna Dior and all these other folks, and, you know, Ashley Marie Preston, who is a fabulous activist. She loves shaking the table, honey, and I'd be right there with her, sis.
Me
gonna
too.
Shake it, honey. Shake it.
Absolutely.
She just wrote a piece that, you know, unfortunately continues to be sobering for me. She just wrote a piece because she just celebrated her 36th birthday, and she talks about how, you know, when you look at the statistics, a lot of Black trans folks don't make it to their 36th birthday. I believe the statistic is that the average like death age.
Well, yeah, it's growing now, thankfully, but for a few years, it was 35.
It was 35
Ashley Marie
old.
Preston also started a campaign, hashtag Thrive Over 35, for on if you happen to be black, trans, and a woman on your 35th birthday, hashtag Thrive Over 35. It's sick that we have to even do these things, but...
That's my point, well, yeah. It's sick. It's annoying, and, like, we shouldn't have to. Shit.
No, yeah, Char, I remember you saying that to me once. I feel like we were in a car somewhere, and you were talking about how the average life expectancy of a black trans woman is 35 years, and how it felt to just have that as a piece of data that you have to live with every day. And that really rung in my ears for a long time, and still does, to hear you say that. And I want to give you the final word here on this moment. Like, what is bringing you hope? What are you looking forward to? Like, what's giving you any kind of hope in this moment?
I guess what's giving me hope, much like Travelle mentioned, was the march that happened in Brooklyn. But I want to emphasize that we're not going to get anywhere until we tear all of this stuff down. We Amen. Cannot afford to compartmentalize. We cannot afford to put things on the back burner, because what the leadership that we have been following and adhering to is just, those plans are just not working. So if we're going to attack racism as a community, we also need to attack sexism, misogyny, homophobia, and transphobia. Because my life and other people's lives matter just as much as yours do. And until it's a level playing field, we're not going to get anywhere. And that's my one main concern on the other side of these protests. What will it look like? Because I firmly believe we're not going to reach a resolution of any sort if we still have people clinging on to patriarchal ideas and systems of oppression.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Whew. All right, Char. Tell people where they can find out more about what you're doing and all of the things that, all the places that people that love to hear your voice can do that.
Well, thank you. I mean, I'm kind of all over the place right now. I can call myself a writer because I have two pieces dropping this week. I don't know if it'll be out in time for the show.
Hold on. You don't call yourself a writer because you have two pieces dropping this week, because you've been dropping pieces.
I know, but these two really, really mean a lot to me because I stepped out of my comfort zone of entertainment, and I'm talking to some activists, some movers and shakers. And so, yeah, I say that to say you can find me everywhere if you want to keep up with me at Char Says So. That's Char with an S, and that says so, not say so. And you'll find and can keep up with me with everything that I'm doing there, because, like I said, I'm all over the place.
We love
yes,
to see
and
it.
Yes, and Char loves an Instagram live moment. When I tell do. You, if I get on Instagram, Char is probably live, and she be going at it, and I love it. Char, we thank you so much for joining us and being our first returning champion on the show. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got dishonorable mentions and your feedback. Don't go anywhere. We're coming right back. All right, so who does not love a good love story? But also, who does not love a good love scene? Let me tell you, with Dipsy, the stories continue beyond the initial meetups. Come hear what happens behind closed doors. Dipsy is an audio app full of short, sexy stories designed to turn you on. They release new content every week, so there's always more to explore, no matter who you're into or what turns you on. And if you need to wind down, Dipsy also has wellness sessions, sensual bedtime stories, and soundscapes to help you relax before you drift off. I'm looking at some of the new stories that they have this week. Cancer season, for those of you that are into the astrology. Coven, for those of you that are into the witchy. And let me tell you, dessert first, that sounds like my kind of bullshit, okay? So go over to Dipsy Stories and check out the things that they've got going on. For the listeners of this show, Dipsy's offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/fanti. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to dipseastories.com/fanti. That's dipsystories.com/fanti. It's gonna be real good, y'all. It's 2021, and it is way past time for you to be talking about your mental health, and that's why we're excited to be sponsored by BetterHelp. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions. They'll match you with the therapist in under 48 hours, and it's easy to change therapists if needed. That alone is revolutionary. Remember, you don't need a traumatic experience in your life to benefit from therapy. Maybe you're feeling anxious or depressed, or your stress feels like it's too much to manage. get some tools to cope, and make life just a little bit easier. We've talked about our therapy experiences here on Fans High and Tea Time. I've talked to y'all a lot about my experiences with depression and anxiety, but even if you're not going through something like that, having the tools to prepare you for the next time difficult things come, really, really important. Plus, BetterHelp is way more affordable than in-person therapy. See if it's for you. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and Fanti listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/Fanti. That's betterhelp.com/Fanti.
Welcome back, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful people. I feel like I've said that multiple times during this episode, so that means y'all are real cute.
I feel like you're talking to me, so I'm receiving it. I really like my shirt. Shut up. Keep going.
All right, it's time to get into our listener feedback. This is the section where we read out some of the emails, some of the tweets, the DMs that you've been sending us about past episodes. And this one comes from Eliza via the emails, who had a comment about our tough question a couple weeks back about what should black cops and black military folks do in terms of supporting the movement. Should they quit their jobs? This is what Eliza had to say. They say, the conversation reminded me of something else that I think about a lot. I'm a law student in a public interest program. Everyone in my program agrees that there are serious problems with mass incarceration and prison conditions in this country, but I still have colleagues who want to become prosecutors. On the one hand, it's hard for me to imagine how someone who truly understands the failings of the carceral state could become a prosecutor. She says, progressive prosecutor, quote unquote, is an oxymoron. But on the other hand, as she's starting to get some real world experience, she's starting to realize how important those individual choices are on a systemic level. And so I wanted to ask you, as our resident politics expert, considering what we shared about like our thoughts in terms of, you know, the black cops, black military members, does that apply here too for black lawyers? What do you think?
Well, I think for myself, when I think about an issue like this, one, I think about how hard it must be to have that job, kind of similarly to when we talked about being a police officer. But I also think, like, yes, the way that our system is structured with prosecutors and their proximity to district attorneys and police and all that kind of stuff, like, it's inherently problematic. Mm-hmm. However, I would rather have one of us in there than not. Right. And so if there's a progressive black person that can be in that role and that can be the person that makes the calls on, you know, who gets prosecuted and who doesn't, or what charges end up looking like, or what sentences end up looking like, I'd rather see one of us in that district attorney role, in that prosecutor role, in those kinds of roles, as opposed to someone I don't trust. And I don't mean just like, as opposed to a white person, right? But like, as opposed to a person I wouldn't trust, because you could put a black person in that role, that wouldn't be good, right? And so I would say, like, I would rather, while this system exists, and we're talking about burn all this shit down, while this system still exists, I think it's important for us to be in as many of those positions as we possibly can be to make them better. Mm-hmm. Also recognizing, like we talked about on the show a couple weeks ago, like being the black journalist in the room is difficult, and how long do you keep taking one for the team?
Yeah.
Similarly, I think when you're a black prosecutor or a black police officer or whatever, you have to ask yourself, like, how long do you keep taking one for the team, and how long do you keep putting up with the bullshit so that you can, you know, be a part of the change? So I get the reservation there, but I also think it's important for people to be in the room where it's happening.
Yeah, I'm reminded of a lot of the criticisms that Kamala Harris received as she was, you know, running for the Democratic presidential nomination. And a lot of, like, movement makers, movement builders, like, had issues with her being a prosecutor and her record as a prosecutor. And, you know, but I think you're right that, like, you know, I would rather have somebody who professes to be a progressive in some of these systems while we still have said systems. Because, you know, to what Char just said right before break, we want to burn all this shit down.
Right. No, yeah. And I think with Kamala Harris, like, obviously Kamala Harris is in contention to be vice president, the vice presidential candidate. And within the next 7-8 weeks, we'll find out, you know, who that person's going to be. But, like, if it does end up being Kamala Harris, like, we have to hold her feet to the fire as well, right? Like, mm-hmm. I liked Kamala Harris as a candidate, but we also have to hold her accountable the same way that we're going to have to hold accountable Joe Biden should he become president. So thank you for your letters. You can send us your letters to fanti@maximumfun.org, or you can DM us on Twitter or Instagram at Fanti Podcast. So I want to jump into our dishonorable mentions. This is where we are calling out someone for their good or for their stupid things that didn't necessarily warrant a full episode, but were definitely worth shouting out. I guess I'll jump in and go first. Mm-hmm. I want to shout out Joshua Johnson, who is a new anchor over at MSNBC and NBC News. He hosted a special on NBC News Now, which is the streaming platform from NBC News, called Pride and Protest. It really focused on the intersections of blackness and queerness and in this moment. And I thought it was a really, really fantastic hour of content, really focusing on the ways that that intersectionality, the ways that that looks, the way that it plays out, and the ways that it impacts the movement for Pride, but also for Black lives. There was some weirdo wearing a turban on there. We don't have to get into that.
But as I'm shouting out
Joshua Johnson, I do want to shout you out, Travelle, because you were a part of Pride and Protest.
Oh yes,
you were
so
also
much.
You were also featured in the Disclosure documentary this past week that came out on Netflix. Disclosure is a documentary featuring the stories featuring. Really, I feel like Disclosure, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, and maybe you should just do this, but like Disclosure is a documentary that talks about the images of trans people in the media and how they've had impact on culture and society over the course of, you know, history, really. And it was a fantastic documentary that's on Netflix right now. Travelle is in that as well. And honey, she's had a busy week because you are also in the New York Times with your bae in a beautiful photo, as you described it, with your luscious body.
Yeah.
And so you can find that Times feature that came out this past Sunday. There's links to it on Travelle's social media and on our social media as well. So check that out. So honorable mentions to the blackness and the gayness and the queerness and the transness and all of the ness this past week.
Yes, yes, yes. My first, as I mentioned earlier, my first honorable mention goes to the Brooklyn Liberation March organizers led by Black trans women. They were able to bring together an estimated 15,000 people to say all at once, right, that Black trans lives matter. I want to play just a short clip from a speech that, you know, longtime organizer, former co-worker of mine at Out Magazine, Raquel Willis, said about that she had. It was a call and response that she did with the audience.
I believe in my power.
I believe in my power.
I believe in your power.
I believe in your power.
I believe in our power.
I believe in our power.
I believe in Black trans power.
I believe in Black trans power.
And so I love that. And shout out to Raquel and all the work being done in favor of Black trans lives.
Absolutely. Okay. My first dishonorable mention is going to ABC for canceling The Baker and the Beauty. Now,
are you serious?
I'm dead ass because I think it's important. Number one, just because it's a beautiful show featuring a first generation immigrant family from Cuba and their bakery and their love and how their lives really get turned upside down when they're sexy ass son falls in love with the superstar. I flew through all 9 episodes of this season, and I'm really praying that it gets picked up by a streamer. If you haven't watched it, it's on Hulu right now, and you should definitely give it a watch. But I think it's interesting that the show got canceled in a moment where we're talking about diverse stories, right, and needing to see more Black and brown stories. And this was a Cuban family, and and I'm not just supporting it because they were first gen Cuban, right? Like, it was a really good show, and I really enjoyed it. It was funny, it was heartfelt, and so I'm hoping that one of the streamers pick it up. If you are a fan of The Baker and the Beauty, there is a change.org petition that's going around that has tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of signatures right now supporting the show. And I just think it's important that we have that kind of representation on television, because we don't see those kinds of images enough yet.
Speaking of the importance of Black stories, I'm giving an honorable mention to the Black reporters at the Los Angeles Times, who organized and staged an action today. Today is Tuesday when we're recording this, using the hashtag Black at LAT, sharing the experiences of former Black reporters. Black former LA Times employees.
Yeah. In terms like, they were over that black shit. I'm up out of here.
Black former LA Times employees, myself included, our experiences that included, you know, is systemic racism at the publication, which is representative of issues in the entire journalism institution, as we spoke about before on our episode, The Newsroom, Where It Happens. And so shout out to them for organizing and putting all of that information on Front Street and holding their masthead and their institution accountable.
Also, for full transparency, as we said before, Travelle and I are the president and vice president, respectively, of the National Association of Black Journalists here in Los Angeles. We put out a statement in solidarity with the reporters under the Black at LAT hashtag and you know, stand with them in solidarity. Lastly, my last honorable mention is going to go. I never thought I would say this, so I didn't see this coming. But I really want to shout out to the teenagers of the world and the K-poppers of the world for your overwhelmingly underwhelming attendance at Trump's Tulsa rally this past weekend. And I want to reframe the coverage because I saw that one of the ideas that we've had for a segment here that Laura came up with was like, let me reframe that for you. And we've never actually done it as a segment, but definitely want to reframe this one piece of news, because a lot of the news around this has been that, oh, they pulled a prank and they got over on Donald Trump. And I saw someone tweet this and I thought it was really, really valuable. They was like, no, this wasn't a prank. This was activism, right? People knew what they were doing. They knew exactly the effect that it would have. And so I just want to shout out to all of the teenagers and K-poppers and everyone that was involved.
Is K-popper a word?
No, it's not. I just want to shout them out because what you did was fantastic and I am completely here for it.
Last but not least, my dishonorable mention goes to all those people who have stopped already posting about Black Lives Matter and Black Trans Lives Matter, and you've gone about your business because your city, your state has reopened, and so you don't care about the movement and the work anymore. We see you. And we will be holding you accountable. I'm just going to leave it right there.
Also, really, I just think it's important to see that, to acknowledge that as we continue to go through this moment, like, there are all kinds of different movements that are popping up within this movement. Right now, there's from Build Power, there's one that is popping up talking about how Hollywood needs to change. Mm-hmm. We're talking about how newsrooms need to change. We're talking about a lot of different places and the ways that they need to change. And so hopefully we will continue to see that change come about. Just want to remind you one more time that we are looking for a new producer. So go to MaximumFun.org/jobs to find out more about the open position for a producer at Fanti. You can be a part of the Fanti team, not just be a part of the Fanti fam. Again, that's MaximumFun.org/jobs for more information. So, listen, we thank you for tuning in with us. If you are listening on iTunes or Apple Music or Apple Podcasts, excuse me, you can jump into the app and give us a 5-star review. It would really mean a lot to us, to people helping them to find the show and understanding what the show is and why you love it so much. So we'd appreciate your 5-star review. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, you can tweet at us at Fanti Podcast or follow us on Instagram at Fanti Podcast. And as I said earlier, you can send us an email to Fanti@MaximumFun.org. And you can become a member of MaximumFun.org/join and let them know that you love this show. This one. This show. This one right here.
Yes, with at MaximumFun.org/join, you can become a member and you can financially support us. We really would appreciate.
What was that, Travelle? Say that again.
Financially support us. And we would
financially support us.
I hate you so much. We would really appreciate that. As always, shout out to the creator of our show's music, Corece, Core.ece is how you can find him on wherever you get Slayworthy Audio. And Ashley Nguyen, who is always helping us out with our social media videos. She did our main photo as well. Shout out to her in the work that she does. As always, we want to thank our producer,
Laura Swisher,
and our other producer,
Jordan Keller.
Sorry, y'all. The instruments are broken today.
This is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.
Activism.
Wow.